ask Donna to read our preamble. If you want to unmute yourself and go ahead and do that, thank you.
Sure. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Thanks, Donna. And I've asked Helene to read the workshop opening this morning.
Okay, I'm Helene. Although some service roles have titles and job descriptions that might intimidate some, the people who fill those roles have endured the problems of alcoholism just as we have. Yet they are proof that Al-Anon is a program of self-discovery and personal growth. Participating in service projects with them can be an inspiring opportunity to get to know them at a different level and learn that we also have great potential for personal growth. Probably most everyone was at least a little reluctant to take on their first service project or position. We are often unsure of our abilities and afraid of the commitment. If we haven't yet engaged in service, it's easy to think of all the reasons in the world why we shouldn't. However, the magic of Al-Anon service lies in benefits that we cannot anticipate before we've actually done any service. Those of us involved in service are grateful because it boosts our self-confidence and self-esteem, which some of us experience as an unanticipated miracle. That's why many of us look back at our early service work and consider it as a gift from our higher power. Members who haven't yet participated in service can't yet imagine feeling this way. Often those of us affected by alcoholism have a tendency to isolate ourselves from others. We may be afraid or unwilling to request help. Recovery in Al-Anon is all about reaching out for help, and service is no exception. If our sponsor is active in service, we can ask for assistance. If not, we may wish to find a service sponsor who can guide us. By asking for help in service, we again move forward toward healthy relationships and away from the outdated thinking that tells us we have to do everything on our own. No one has to do it alone. Al-Anon service is a team effort working for a shared spiritual purpose. As our self-esteem increases from the growth we experience in service, we are better able to take home our renewed feelings of confidence and be better partners in all of our relationships. We also discover that we are capable of learning healthy forms of conflict resolution, which we can also apply in our other relationships. It's impossible to think ourselves into recovery. We have to take action to learn and experience different behaviors. Through our willingness to participate in service, we open ourselves up to new growth and the opportunity to learn new interpersonal skills. This will help us build healthy relationships both inside and outside of the fellowship. This is from Discovering Choices, pages 244 to 245, copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, Incorporated, 2008.
Thanks, Helene. And today, this morning, Janet has agreed to read the July reading from page 26 from our booklet, When I Got Busy, I Got Better, which is P78.
Hi, I'm Janet. Thank you for asking me to read. It wasn't too long after I began spending time at our information service office answering the telephone and giving information about Al-Anon that I had my first really unexpected encounter with the rewards of service. One afternoon, a woman experiencing a great deal of confusion and pain walked into the office to talk about the alcoholic in her life. We talked for some time and I shared what I could of my experience, strength, and hope. In the process, as I absorbed her pain, I also recalled my own encounters with alcoholism. I got upset myself. Shortly after this troubled newcomer left the office, a member breezed in to fill a literature order. I felt a need to talk to him about my feelings. I don't recall clearly, but I think I mentioned how difficult it was to hear the turmoil of the woman who had just left, how concerned I was about whether I had helped her, and how drained I felt from the conversation. In reply, he said that he encouraged himself to feel that whatever effectiveness be brought to service was acceptable in the eyes of his higher power. Service was about encouraging his own recovery, and he gave himself permission to limit his activities to what felt challenging, but not overwhelming. His attitude also conveyed that he didn't feel responsible for anyone else's recovery, not the woman's who preceded him in the office and not mine. I felt a weight lift from my shoulders. Apparently, the God of my understanding was prompting me to let go of my feelings of guilt and doubt about myself. It was not only possible, but also desirable and even healthy to consider that I was not in charge of anyone's recovery. My words might have helped this woman in distress, or they might not have. I could certainly know that I wished her well, but I couldn't fix her life. I could do only a small part in recalling for both of us the hope of recovery. And in the eyes of my higher power, that's enough. Mentally, I released this woman and her load of suffering. I turned my attention to a recovery in which I had more influence, my own. I asked the man leaving the office with his sack of literature if he would be my sponsor, and he said yes. Since then, he has helped me to trust more fully in the God of my understanding. I ask myself, what unexpected benefit have I received from service? This is from When I Got Busy, I Got Better. Thank you.
Yes, page 26, copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters Incorporated, 1994. And thank you so much, Janet, for agreeing to do that today. So this morning, each of our panelists, our three panelists, will share for 15 minutes, and the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly brief shares. So remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. And now I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Cherie. And Cherie is from Washington, and I guess I'll just go ahead and let you start. Cherie, unmute yourself, and thank you so much.
Hi, everybody. I want to say good morning from Washington. My name is Cherie, and I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen, and I'm very honored to be here today to share on this topic. You know, I was thinking about this over the last several weeks and months, actually, about this theme for this month for the workshop, focusing on my hopes and dreams. And if you were to ask me 20 years ago what my hopes and dreams were, it was to get him sober. It was really simple. He needed to be sober so that I could be happy. We could all be fine if the alcoholic wasn't drinking anymore. And it took me years and years to really change that thinking around that my happiness is not dependent on somebody else. And that's why I feel like today, you know, the tool that we talk about often in our meetings, or at least the meetings I attend, that tool of detachment is so important. And I feel like there's so much more for me to learn. So I'm really looking forward to today's workshop and in hearing from the other panelists as well. There's a line in that page 26 that really stuck out for me. And it was the line where it says service was about encouraging his own recovery. And, you know, when I was, when I got involved in service, it never was I told, oh, this will help your recovery. There was a job that needed to be done. And somebody said, hey, Cherie, you know, you might be interested in this, or you might want to do this. And I remember, I'm going to share just a quick little story. There was, I was sitting in my Wednesday night meeting, and this gentleman showed up, and he sort of sat there. He introduced himself as our district rep, and then he scolded us, like the group as a whole, because we were not in attendance. We did not have a representation at the assembly, the area assembly. And I remember being so irritated at this guy, like, who does he think he is? Like, who are you to show up to our meeting and tell us we're dropping the ball in this area? Like, I had no idea what an area assembly was. I didn't know what a district rep was. And I remember being very curious and, of course, offended. And so I need to know the facts. And I started reading. I started reading the guidelines on a group representative. And I started reading guidelines out of our service manual about area assemblies and the whole entire purpose and intention of them. And so I was curious. And then I was talking about it with my friends. And because I don't want to do it alone, and that's the whole theme about Al-Anon is we don't do it alone. It was read in the introduction. My two friends and I, we all became group representatives at the same time. So we all picked a group and we say, hey, can we be a group representative? And our groups didn't have group GRs. And so they said, yes, that would be great. So when I became involved in service at that group level, I had no idea it was going to help my recovery. I also had no idea it was going to be a part of my hopes and dreams later on down the road. It was just an action to take at that time, at that moment, because there was a need to be filled. And I'm a good filler. I'm a good problem solver. I'm a good rescuer. That's how I was raised. And so the thing about being that group representative, what I didn't realize at the time, but it was a saving place for me. During that time, my oldest daughter, I have a blended family. My husband and I have six kids, and they came to us in a variety of ways. And during that time, she was a senior in high school, and she came to live with us. And during that time, and this is what I know about the disease of alcoholism, she became very suicidal during that period, that stretch of time, her senior year. And how can she not? She's a kid who's been affected by alcoholism her whole entire life. And for the first time, she's living with us full time. And not to say anything that's bragging, but really, really emphasizing that because my husband and I practice the principles of each of our programs, our home for the first time in her life was a safe place for her to fall apart. And during that time, it was really scary, not knowing, you know, if she was going to make it home from school that day or what her plan was going to be. She would communicate to us that she was going to end her life that day. And so my husband and I went through a period of time, a stretch where it was, you know, we were just living one day at a time. My sponsor encouraged me to go to more meetings, to share more in the meetings and really stay active in Al-Anon. So that's what I did. And I had this group representative position to serve, and that kept me focused and that kept me involved. So where I wasn't obsessing on my daughter's behavior, I wasn't obsessing on what's the plan, because I'm a girl that always comes up with a plan. What are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? How are we going to solve it? There's a lot of, I think I'm helping. I have been informed that it's really controlling. Okay, that's fair. And I don't want to do that in this child's life. I don't want to do it in our relationship. And my husband and I, one of the things that really helped during this time was really focusing on the principles in our traditions. Now, our traditions, in the intro, it says that there promotes harmony and growth in our groups. Well, I didn't know what harmony looked like in my family. So practicing the principles and the traditions really helped me take a step back and detach and look at where I can participate in my family's lives without controlling and managing and manipulating and all of the other words of the alphabets that we can come up with in Al-Anon. And so when I focus on those principles, I can look at, you know, I can look at that I'm not the authority, and that I do have, our family unit has an authority, and it's a God of our understanding. I can also use tradition 4, and that, you know, my children are autonomous. Now today, all of my children are adults, but during that time, they do get some autonomy, but at the same time, I'm still responsible for a certain thing, which, you know, is for their safety and for their welfare, their physical welfare, that type of stuff. And over the years, those traditions have become behavior guidelines for me. That's just the best way to sum them up. Those are the behavior guidelines where I can take a step back and I can, and it says this in our detachment pamphlet, S19, where it says that we can take a step back and be objective. Now, I don't know how to be objective. I just know how to be in it and be consumed by whatever's going on with my loved ones. So, you know, during that time with my daughter, my oldest daughter, my hopes and dreams was just that she stays alive for another day. It was really simple. It was just one day at a time with that. And that was a really long stretch. And my husband and I both have different takes during that time. But, you know, I'm so grateful that I had a focus in that, that was involved in service, that we in our district got super connected with those two gals that I was a GR with. We would go to assemblies together. We roomed together. We were the three that, you know, stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning, just laughing and talking. And so because of getting involved in another level of the service structure, you know, I got another level of connection and fellowship and support that I didn't, you know, I didn't recognize or realize when I first got into saying, hey, yeah, I'll be a GR, I'll be a group rep. But, you know, later on, I continued that service and I love participating in workshops. I love participating in book studies or literature studies, all of that type of stuff. And, you know, as I continued in my service, life continues. And this is where I have another daughter. And when I was a district rep, you know, she's 20 years old and she's not living at home anymore. And she is doing what 20-year-olds do. And there was a lot of partying going on. There was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of drugging. And I wanted to obsess about what she was doing. And again, service kept me grounded. My head needed to be where my feet were, in a sense. I got really busy as a district rep, not intentionally. In fact, my husband says, I didn't know you were going to be so busy in service when you were doing this. But we had our district meetings, but our area also asked our district to host a convention, the Al-Anon convention that year. So not only did I have our district meetings, but I also had a convention meeting every month. And there was a committee of 14. And it was like the most fun I've ever had in service was this convention committee. And we met at my friend Ann's house. She's a past delegate, a past trustee of Worldwide Service. And she opened her home and she had tables set up and we potlucked. Like, who does that? And we potlucked every month and we had a theme every month of what the food was going to be. She made it fun. Service again showed me and reiterated that it wasn't about this job and drudgery, that it really was about fellowship and love and support. And we had this goal to put on this convention with, you know, great speakers and great workshops. And we had over 400 people at our convention that year. It was pretty incredible. And I'm really proud. I'm proud of what I learned. I didn't realize it until later when I was studying the concepts, that when our concepts are talking about, I'm just going to minimize it, it's really about roles and responsibilities and what's my job in this service position that I have. And am I fulfilling that responsibility or am I stepping out of that role? And I needed that. I needed that in that position. I needed that at home as well, because I have this daughter who's, I think she's going off track, right? I have an opinion. I always have an opinion. My sponsor informed me, though, that the most important tradition I need to practice is tradition 10, where I have no opinion on outside issues. And my daughter's lifestyle at that time was an outside issue, and I needed to stay focused. Now, again, my hopes and dreams can't be banked on somebody else. It needs to be what brings me joy. And in being involved in service and working with the committee and working with my friends in Al-Anon has always brought me joy. It gets me excited and I love learning new things. And so I'm grateful during that time looking back. I don't know where I would have gone off the rails if I hadn't been connected right in the middle of projects and working with other members that, you know, were being in service as group reps or, you know, coordinators, whatever they may be. But most recently, a couple of years ago, our youngest two children are adopted through foster care. My husband and I did foster care for a number of years, and we had two that just never left. And so we always share that he's got two, I got two, and we bought two. And they, a couple of years ago, they were old enough and interested enough to meet their biological family. And I will share, from the moment they met that bio family, their life has imploded since 2018. And that was very difficult. It was one of the things that through the last several years, that was one of my concerns and worries, but it was definitely one of those things I gave over to my higher power that I would put in my God box often, that however this connection and reintroduction with a bio family was going to look, that I needed to be supportive and not add more harm to whatever it may look like. And my youngest daughter is 20 now, but a couple of years ago, she graduated from high school. And that's when she just, everything went south. And it, you know, looking back, the signs were that it probably was sooner than that, but I knew that I couldn't control. I couldn't obsess about what somebody else is doing. Again, referring back to that pamphlet, S19 detachment, it says we're not responsible for another person's disease or their recovery from it. Now, my youngest daughter is affected by the disease of alcoholism. Her mom, her bio mom, is an addict. Her dad, same thing. She was put into our home and, you know, alcoholic dad and crazy mom, Al-Anon mom, right? So this kid's been affected by the disease. And what I need to know is today, what are my boundaries? How can I participate or not participate in her lifestyle? And I'm so grateful that I was involved in service at a different levels, at the area level and more, that kept me focused, that kept me connected to other members, that really helped and supported the principle of detachment. I don't know if I could have just done it on my own, but having somebody else to talk about the things that were going on in my home, because that's the most important things for me, is what's going on in my home with my family and in my circle, in my world. And my natural instinct is to fix. And this principle of, no, let's just focus on me. Well, that's not natural for me. That feels really uncomfortable to just focus on me and what's my hopes and dreams. Several years ago, my husband asked me, what are your hopes and dreams? And I couldn't come up with an answer. I didn't know what my hopes and dreams. Today, I know what they are. I've been living one for the last 10 days. My husband and I are on a motorcycle trip and traveling across three states. And we have this relationship today that I always wanted 20 years ago. I wanted that connection and that intimacy with the alcoholic. And today I have it. Now, I only have 50% of it. But 50% of it is because I focus on our principles and those learning about myself and the steps, focusing on boundaries and healthy behavior guidelines and the traditions, and really what's my responsibility and role because of the concepts. So detachment to me is living. It's a living action. It's not just a feeling that I used to have, that cold wall, but today it's really about putting love in action. And I'm grateful to be here this morning, and thank you for letting me share.
Sorry, I guess that's my cue. Thank you so much for sharing, Sheree, and for taking time out on your motorcycle ride to be here with us today. So our next speaker is going to be Bev from Nebraska. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I am Bev, and I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. Thanks, Maureen, and thank you for inviting me to speak. You know, last year when you invited me and I realized it was like the summer of 2021, it just seemed so far away, you know, before this workshop was going to happen. And now, and the other day she sent me an email just reminding me that it was this weekend. And I'm like, oh, my, it is this weekend. My goodness, how quickly that time went. You know, in the information that Maureen sent me, one of the questions that we could talk about was, in what service position did you need to use the tool of detachment the most? And I want to share a little story about when I was the area delegate for Nebraska. There was a past delegate who, well, she just felt the need to give me a lot of instruction and direction on how to give my delegates report, what to report, what people needed to hear, what they didn't need to hear, how to do my delegates report. And, you know, in the beginning, I wasn't, you know, in the beginning, I'm sure I probably thought, you know, this was helpful, but it got to where she was quite critical of anything that I did or said. And, you know, she would, I have to tell you, she would come at me and I would just, it just drove me crazy. And I got where I was paralyzed, you know, where I just didn't even know what to say or do because her behavior was just really pushy. And so then when I couldn't say anything or really didn't say anything that showed any sort of confidence, you know, I looked stupid and incompetent. So I'm sure that just kept her, you know, well, yeah, I got to continue to give her instruction. Now, I am not a person to want to give my delegates report in a song and dance or in a skit or, you know, we all know there's a delegate who gave her delegate's report in a swimsuit one year, because, you know, all the way from Virginia Beach, here she is, you know, and this past delegate thought I should do something like that. Oh my gosh, that is not my style. That is not my style at all. And when I gave my first delegate's report at the assembly, she was sitting in the back of the room, and I happened to notice her. And I did a PowerPoint. So, you know, and I was pretty impressed with myself that I could do a PowerPoint at that time. And I saw her just kind of drop her shoulders and like take a deep breath. And she threw her head back, and then she slowly brought her head forward and laid it on the table, and laid her head on the table during my whole delegate's report. And I have to tell you, I was crushed. I mean, that just hurt so much. Now, I do not know what was going on with her at the time, or if there was anything going on with her, but what I had to remember, and that my sponsor reminded me of, is that, you know, she's been affected by the disease of alcoholism, just like the rest of us. I have good days and I have bad days in recovery. And, you know, Al-Anon has seen the best of me, and unfortunately, Al-Anon has also seen the worst of me. And I have to give that grace to other people. And so I really had to work hard on detaching from her behavior, and really just fulfilling the job as delegate in the way that I saw fit, the way that I wanted to do it. And to not, now I'm not saying that you shouldn't stretch yourself and, you know, learn some new skills, but I just was not going to do the delegate's report in a song and dance. Period. That was not a choice for me. I was not going to do that. And what that has taught me is, you know, that served as an example of what I don't want to be in Al-Anon or in any other part of my life. I do not want to be a past something that sits in judgment and criticizes how the next people perform the job. I have tried really, really hard to, you know, when I'm done with the service job, I'm done. God had me serve in whatever service position that I have served in over my time, the exact time that he wanted me to serve, from the beginning date to the end date. And I truly believe that, you know, I don't need to regret that I didn't get to participate in some vote, you know, because I was no longer the person who voted. I don't have to wish that my time would have been sooner or later, because I know that my higher power put me exactly where I was supposed to be, at each hurdle, at each part of my journey. And so it's given me the opportunity to encourage other people, you know, to really make it their own. Yes, I'm available for questions and encouragement, and I can share with you if you want how I did it, but you have to make it your own, because then it becomes genuine. You know, it becomes, I'm able to pass on the message of what, of whatever it is I'm needing to pass on the message for. Now, after that time as delegate, I went on to serve in some other positions for probably, you know, the next 10, 12 years. Today, I am currently serving as the treasurer for my home group, and I'm sponsoring people, and I love it. I just absolutely love where God has me right now. And that also, that lesson in detachment taught me too, that, you know, my name is not attached to anything that I've done in Al-Anon. You know, what I've done for Al-Anon is about Al-Anon and for Al-Anon. You know, I do not want to be the person who stands up and says, you know, well, I was the one who chaired that project, you know, the one that's getting all the praise, the project that's getting all the praise. You know, I'm the one who was at the World Service Conference to vote on this, because ego can grab a hold of me quickly. And then there I go, you know, there I'm running off. So it's way better for me to have humility and let other people have time to shine. You know, I had my time in different positions, and give other people an opportunity to learn those spiritual principles, learn the conflict resolution, learn the growth and benefit from the growth, you know, that service provides, because I don't want to hoard it all. It's not all for me. I have to share it. You know, I have to let other people serve. And for those of you, some of you on here know that I am someone who easily says, you know, I'm sure you want to put your name in for such and such. You know, I see that you've been doing, you know, I've noticed that you have some skills with this or that. You always seem to talk about solutions rather than the negative. And so I really like to encourage people to get involved, whether it be at the group level, at, you know, the area level. And over my years in Al-Anon, I have seen people, leaders emerge. You know, you'll see somebody that at first you think, oh gosh, they're very shy and timid and they don't say much. And, you know, pretty soon they're the area chair, you know, maybe not pretty soon. I mean, it might take a while for them to get there, but it's just amazing to watch people grow. And that benefits me, you know, to see how other people have grown from their service in Al-Anon and be able to share about how the spiritual principles have worked in Al-Anon. And then I've been able to take those spiritual principles and apply them in my life, my personal life, you know, with my family and my job. I have worked really, really hard at the current job that I have to not participate in gossip. You know, it's so easy, you know, to be sitting there with coworkers and some other coworker, you know, is the topic of discussion for a minute and to say something. And I have really tried hard not to participate. Now, I haven't been 100%, you know, I have participated in some, but I have this feeling that happens like when I can, you know, we all know what gossip is, you know, we just all know what it is. And, you know, I can feel this kind of, this just kind of feeling in my gut that says, ugh, you know, and so there are times that, you know, that I can get up and walk away, but there's times I can't, you know, so I just try really hard not to engage in that conversation. Cause you know, I worked in a job for many years where I saw how gossip destroyed people, how it hurt me, how gossip, hurt others. And, you know, I serves as an example of what I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be that person. And my family, I absolutely love my family. We spend time together. I get so much you know, I have two sisters and some other girls in the family. And when we're together, we giggle, we laugh, we enjoy each other's company. And it is the most wonderful love to be around. But, you know, we also talk about what's going on in our lives and what we would like to do or not do. And I have no opinion. I have absolutely no opinion of what they want to do. They may ask, and then I may tell them what I think, or, you know, but I don't say anything until they ask. Al-Anon has taught me that, you know, to really listen to what people are saying. And sometimes people are just talking, they're not asking a question. And so I don't need to respond. I can just listen. And, you know, detaching from others' choices and the outcomes isn't always easy, but I know that they have a higher power and that a higher power is taking care of them. I also know that a higher power is taking care of me. And sometimes I have to detach from my own problems, from my own obsessive thinking, you know, cause I can't get anywhere when I'm obsessively thinking. I have to just get it out of my head. And sometimes that means that I need to be on a Zoom call. I need to go to a meeting. I need to balance the checkbook for the Friday night group. And you know, that gives me a break from whatever that obsessive thinking has been attached to me. So, you know, there's been so many times that service has saved me because I had some responsibility in service that I needed to go take care of, which meant I didn't have to worry about what the alcoholic was doing or what that coworker was talking about yesterday. You know, that I can just move on and trust that I am being loved and cared for by my higher power. Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you so much, Bev. That was excellent. And don't forget, yes, Jazz Hands. Thanks, Helene. I saw your picture first. To thank her with the Jazz Hands. So our final speaker today, this morning, is going to be Carrie Kay. And Carrie Kay is speaking to us from Virginia today. If you would like to go ahead and unmute and start sharing. Thanks, Carrie.
Okay, so thank you for inviting me to be here. I'm happy to be here. I too had a similar experience where I think you asked me last August, because I know when you said July, I was actually thinking, like, did you ask me a month late? Or are you actually asking me 11 months in advance? don't normally plan 11 months in advance. And so, but of course I use my time wisely, which was to wait until yesterday to start really thinking about things. So when I saw the focusing on my hopes and dreams, a lesson in detachment, my first thought was like, well, what does that have to do with detachment? And then I realized, oh, it's probably supposed to be read focusing on my hopes and dreams, a lesson in detachment, as opposed to focusing on your hopes and dreams, or focusing on my hopes and dreams for you, which are the kinds of things that I did a lot of before getting into recovery. So yeah, it's easy. It's funny how easily I can forget, like, oh yes, I'm here for me, focusing on me and my recovery. So the question that was at the end of that reading was, what unexpected benefit have I gotten from service? And, you know, I was reflecting on my journey in service. So I'll just say, I started in Al-Anon when I was in college, and I got involved in some groups that were very active in our district and in our area. And so for me, like, there was no separation really between like service and other forms of recovery. It was just all part of the package of what I was seeing in people. That those were the examples that I was seeing, is that people were coming to meetings regularly. People were talking about having worked the steps. People were talking about sponsorship. And then there was one weekend, I recall, when I was pretty new and I can't remember what was going on, but I was trying to get a hold of some people using my phone list, and I couldn't get a hold of anyone. Of course, this was before cell phones too. And I couldn't get a hold of anyone. No one was home. And the more people I tried, the more angry I got. Like, my feelings went from whatever crisis emotions I had to like, now I'm just getting mad that nobody is available for me. And by Sunday afternoon or evening, I finally got a hold of my sponsor, and she told me that everyone had been out at the area assembly all weekend. And I was like, well, what the heck was that? Like, why wasn't I there? And that was how I found out about area assemblies. And I started asking questions about that. And so I will say, like, one of the things, the unexpected benefits that I got from service is learning that I was a very selfish person, because my first motivations for getting involved were like, I feel left out and I don't want to feel left out. I want to be included. And that's not like the worst reason to get involved, but a lot of my attitudes at that time were about what I could get out of service, like how I could feel useful, and how I could, I very mistakenly thought that service was a way for me to, you know, have things my way. It's really, really not the easiest path for having things my way. Like, yeah, let me get together with 40 other people who are just like me, and I'm sure it'll be easy for it to go my way. So I was wrong about that. But, you know, that was my motivation a lot, was I needed to be needed and I needed to feel useful. I was the youngest child of three kids, that we all grew up in this alcoholic home. And I think I just didn't have much of an identity. Like, I just didn't really know a lot about who I was and what I wanted. I didn't have any hopes and dreams. I mean, I felt like my life was kind of over when I got to Al-Anon. I was like the oldest, saddest 19-year-old on the planet when I got to Al-Anon, because I just, my aspiration was to drop out of college. That was my plan. That was the whole extent of my plan, was I was going to drop out of college at the end of that semester. And that was it. I hadn't planned anything beyond that. And I didn't do that because I got in Al-Anon in March of that year. And I don't know, I didn't tell anybody my plan, but I guess I felt different enough by the time I needed to make plans for the next year that I stuck with it and finish my degree, but I didn't have any hopes and dreams. And so, you know, being involved, being part of a group, whether that was part of my home group or part of my district or part of my area, filled a need that I had to be a part of something. And like I said, it's not the worst reason in the world to get involved in service. But I believe that by continuing to be involved and learning the lessons that I needed to learn, I was able to evolve that to really see that it was an opportunity for me. It was a gift for me, and it was a chance to be a part of something bigger than myself and to bring something to that experience rather than just take something from it. So I had a lot of lessons in humility, I would say, in service, and mostly just, you know, becoming aware that I didn't know as much as I thought I knew, not just about facts and how like the service structure worked, but like about things. Like I didn't really understand the big picture the way that I thought I did. So there were things big and small. Like I remember the first time I went to a district meeting and I thought I had gotten there a few minutes early and the meeting had already started and I was outraged because like the one emotion that I had when I was new was anger. So I got angry because I had made this effort to get there. It was like on a Saturday morning, which, you know, again, I was very young. I didn't do Saturday mornings. So I had made what I felt was this heroic effort to get there and even be a few minutes early, and the meeting had already started, and I was so mad at everyone. And I said something to somebody afterwards and was informed that in fact, I was like 25 minutes late. The meeting had started at 9 and I got there at like 9:25 thinking it was a 9:30 meeting. And so, you know, I did a lot of stuff like that where like, I just thought I knew everything and I bumped in to people with that attitude, with that defect of character was way out in front. I know everything. And it was just like it was like some sort of swordfish, right? Like that was what I was leading with, was this weapon of I know everything. And then wondering like, why do people react so strongly and badly to me sometimes? I don't know, must be them. And so, you know, I got a lot of lessons about that and started to see in my inventories that, you know, I had been getting feedback about that all along and just ignoring it, right? Like people using words like abrasive to describe me, edgy. Well, I just dismissed those as people who didn't know what they were talking about, people who wanted to just not mind their own business. I didn't realize that maybe those people were trying to help me. So, you know, it wasn't until I did become desperate enough to consider those other ideas and take a look at myself and try to figure out like, why is everything such a mess? And what are the defects of character that I'm bringing with me everywhere I go? And like Bev said, you know, Al-Anon has seen the best of me and Al-Anon has seen the worst of me. And I feel that very much about my area. And I think I took that for granted a lot of the time too, the amount of patience and tolerance that I was granted by my area. And sometimes when I talk about my early service, it gets tempting to sort of reminisce in that weird sort of braggy way. Like I was so awful, like, oh man, they hadn't seen Obnoxious till I showed up. And it's some weird kind of, like, it's really cool to be like the biggest jerk in the world, which of course it's not. And so I try to remember, like, I probably wasn't exactly as obnoxious as I want to think that I was now, but I know that I was also obnoxious. Like I was anxious to talk at the mic. I was dominant. I was ready to vote early and often and just didn't do any of the things that I try to model now as a person in service. And so, and I guess what I'm getting at with that is I also took it for granted that people were patient and tolerant about that, because for a long time I had this attitude that like I was doing the area a favor by being there. And then there was this one situation where we had in my district where I'd been a GR and I had been an area coordinator and an alternate DR. And I don't know, I guess I felt like I was being mistreated or misunderstood or something as the alternate DR. And so I had started making these pronouncements like a year before we had elections that I wasn't going to stand for DR. I'm pretty sure I was the only one thinking about it at that moment, but like wanted to make sure everybody could make their plans. And so I started talking about it like a year ahead of time. I'm not going to stand for DR. I'm not going to stand for DR. And of course, nobody else was really thinking about it, because typically the alternate DR does stand for DR in my old district anyway. And so, so by the time elections came around, there was somebody who was willing. And I had also decided, well, I'll just go ahead and do that because they probably want to elect me anyway. And then they didn't. Of course, right? Because would you? No, none of you would, right? If you're GRs, would you be like, oh, thank God she changed her mind. We're so grateful. No, you wouldn't. And so my feelings were hurt, obviously. And so I had the opportunity to talk to an Al-Anon friend about that and my sponsor, you know. And I think possibly that was the beginning of a change in attitude about like, I'm not doing them a favor, right? There are lots of people who can do these jobs, and we want to give them to people who are willing, not people who are in it for some sort of ego gratification or, you know, whatever crummy attitudes that I had. And so of course, it was a good thing that it happened to me. I clearly wasn't ready. And so not only did I not get elected DR, but I also wasn't anything else. So I had to go like a whole year or more of not doing area service, which felt really bad too. Like I was very grumpy about that, because by then I had made friends and all my friends were still doing that. And so they would go off to the assembly and I would be at home that weekend. And so you know, that gave me time to reflect and to figure out what I could do to actually be of service. And I started getting more involved in the kinds of roles that would require me to study more of the service manual and to study more of the concepts and to really have a chance to learn about being of service and what does that mean. And it's not about like using the committee to make things happen my way. That's not what it is. It's not about, you know, using my role as whatever, you know, to dominate conversations. That's not what that is. You know, it's about doing more listening than talking. It might be about talking last rather than first. It might be, you know, admitting that I don't know, or that there are certain things that I don't know, or that I do know, but I'm still not sure what's right. Like that was a big, big leap forward for me to realize that, in fact, the more I know about the concepts, the more I know about our service structure, the more I know about how big and diverse Al-Anon is, the fewer things I'm really absolutely sure of. Because I just know that Al-Anon works in a really an amazing, amazing variety of ways. And most of them are not ways that I would do it. But nobody, right? But like, doesn't matter. That's irrelevant in most cases. How would I do it? Unless somebody asks me, how would I do it? And in that case, really, all I get to give is my opinion. Doesn't mean anyone's going to do it my way. Another lesson in detachment, right? My job is to give my opinion when it's asked. My job is to carry the message. And that's pretty much all I get to control. I don't get to control whether people actually take my suggestions or whatever, invite me back to their meetings, you know, their committee meetings or whatever, right? Like I have a really small part, much smaller than I always envisioned it would be. But it is a very valuable part. We all have that part. We all have that same part of, you know, I try to show up with my best self, whatever that is on any given day. And if we all do that, then that's what makes Al-Anon work. And so, so I've been really very fortunate. Like I said, I had no idea. I just took it for granted how much the members of my area were letting me grow up in their presence, you know, at their area meetings. And that it would really be like a debt that I would never be able to repay. You know, the only thing I really can do is try to pass it on. And so, like Bev, I sponsor a number of people now. They're all involved in service, which I'm really grateful for. One of them actually is a GR at a group, and we just finished going through the 12 traditions in past recovery a couple weeks ago. And I kind of wanted to see where she wanted to go next with what to read. And I gave her some choices because I thought, you know, we could go on to the concepts, but I sort of feel like as a GR, that's not really where she needs to go right away. But I didn't want to discourage her from that. Anyway, she said to me, you guys are going to flip. She said to me, I kind of feel like I should read the service manual. And I was like, I think so too. I said, that'll be great. Let's start with the handbook. So we're reading the World Service Handbook. She read the whole thing in one sitting, which I told her not to do. And she did it anyway. So it's going to be fun. Well, I think I said read as much as you want to, which I didn't think meant she would read the whole thing in one shot. So we're going back through it together and we're just talking about what stuff means. And like, I'm so grateful to find a person who wants what I have, you know, which still means like I have to detach, right? Like she's going to be the GR that she's going to be. She's not going to be the GR that I was, which is probably good. But you know, she's going to be who she's going to be. But rather than try to control that, I feel really grateful that she has invited me into her life in this way and that I can try to pass on what I've learned, because it hasn't always been easy to learn what I've learned. So I'm grateful that it can benefit me and the people around me, hopefully. I have no idea. I was all set up to start a timer because I like to try to start and stop on time. And I have no idea if I talked long enough, but hopefully I did. Okay, got the thumbs up from Maureen. So anyway, that's what I have to share. I'm happy to see all of you. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. That was great. Thank you again for joining us today. I also want to say you can still send your questions to our moderator, Elizabeth, in private chat to her, and she'll be glad to ask those for you. And also, if you have any moments of an aha moment today, then we will surely like to be glad to hear those too. So you can also let us know that. So for now, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Elizabeth to finish the question and answer session.
So I have a question for everyone. How has the program helped you focus on your hopes and dreams? And have your hopes and dreams changed after coming into recovery? And how has the program helped you let go of any hopes and dreams that you may have had that have changed? And so let's start with Cherie. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah, you did. Hi, I'm Cherie. Okay. You know what? I'm going to focus on that last question. How has the program helped let go of any hopes and dreams that they may have had before recovery? And, you know, I relate a lot to my family members, especially my children, because Al-Anon has helped me in relationships with that. When my husband and I got together, I wanted to be that super mom and be everything to my children. And unfortunately, I did it unwell. I did it unhealthy. And I've had to, over the years, make a lot of amends to that. One of my dreams was to be that mom that replaced, or, you know, was the best thing ever in their life, you know. And with my oldest daughter, that one that I shared about that was suicidal, her and I have had a run of a long time, over 20 years, you know, and I have participated in the unhealthy side of that disease. I can share with you today, because of the steps and because of good guidance from my sponsors over the years, her and I have this relationship today that I never thought was ever possible. So that dream of having her as my, you know, my daughter, and I'm that person, she calls me her bonus mom. I'm not the stepmom, and I definitely earned the title of evil stepmother. Like, seriously, guys, I earned that one. But today I am the bonus mom. And she wrote me this card for Mother's Day this year in May that really, it just brings tears to my eyes, where she talks about in this card that she handwrote and said that she could see God's fingerprints all over our relationship. And that's not something that ever occurred to me before, but that's because of Al-Anon, and because I was able to keep that focus on my part and what I needed to do or not do in that relationship. You know, today I don't have a relationship with that youngest daughter, and that has been crushing. It's such a minimal word, but I mean, my heart has been shattered and broken, and I have grieved the last couple of years. I don't know if I'll ever be able to say that I'll have a relationship with that daughter, but I have been taught by my sponsor today that I can let go of that fantasy world in my head that her and I are going to be so close like we used to be when she was little, and that I can just love her where she's at today. That's detachment, that I can love her where she's at today, and I can have serenity in my life today. And I wish her the best. I wish her baby the best. And I don't have to know what the future holds. And it doesn't mean that I have broken dreams or there's broken promises anywhere. It's just, this is what it is today. And I know that sounds like a cavalier statement, but Al-Anon has taught me that it's okay. It's actually healthy for me to say it is what it is today, and be grateful for the serenity and the life that I do have, and the relationships with my children and grandchildren that I have today. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheree. Let's go to Beverly.
You know, one of the things learned in Al-Anon is to, be willing to change my mind, you know, about what I think I want, or, and, you know, it's also been important for me to decide what are my hopes and dreams, not what, you know, someone else's hopes and dreams are. Now, I understand the importance of compromise and sacrifice and doing the things that others in my life that I love want to do over what I want to do, but not to the detriment of my own recovery, to my health, to my well-being. And I have done that. And that's my defect, that, you know, that's what I did. And learning from those things, that it's important for me to know what I want. You know, if I tell you I want to paint my bedroom pink or green, I haven't decided. And pretty soon you're saying, oh, you know, green would look really nice with, you know, the furniture you have. Pretty soon I'm thinking I want to paint my bedroom green. Now, is that what I really want to do? Or is that because I'm being influenced by someone else? And there's been so many things that I've learned to just not really share yet, you know, until I've decided what it is I'm going to do. Because I can be so, that people pleasing can still just grab a hold of me. And then I'm doing things before I realize what I'm doing. And then I'm in the middle of it and I got to get out of it. So what is it that I want? And sometimes that does mean talking to my sponsor and some other Al-Anon friends that know not to say to me, oh yeah, go with the green. You know, they know to just listen. They know, you know, to encourage me to continue to follow that gut instinct, even when I have absolutely no evidence to tell me why I want to go in a certain direction or what I'm thinking. Trust that, because that's God talking to me. There's something, that direction that I'm supposed to learn. And a lot of times it's not ever what I thought it was going to be, you know, something completely different, you know, opens up. I meet someone or there's an opportunity that presents itself that I never would have known unless I would have headed that direction and trusted myself. And also, you know, I've learned in Al-Anon, I've heard so many times about, you know, you'll know when you know. And sometimes I'll know in a couple months, and there's been things, you know, the job that I had before this one, I thought for probably 5 years, I wanted to quit. And I kept thinking, God, you know, I need an answer. I need direction. And I wasn't getting anything. It was like, just stay. And there was one day, it was like 5 years after I'd been praying about this, that I was sitting with my boss and she was telling me about some changes that she was going to make and about at the beginning of the new fiscal year. And I had the most overwhelming feeling that said, I'm not going to be here when that happens. And it was just, I knew. And it's waiting for that. It's just turning things over to my higher power and saying, I'm open. Show me what it is I need to know, but also not just living life, waiting for something, waiting for an answer for something. Just keep doing stuff. Go for a walk, go on vacation, you know, paint the bedroom if you want. And so I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure. Can you hear me this time? It looks like how I'm speaking has changed. Can you hear me? Okay. So I'm so sorry. It's so distracting. So Carrie, your answer to that one. And then I do have several questions that are for just individuals. So we'll go from here.
Okay. I think for me, the biggest thing that's changed is that I've gone from not having hopes and dreams to having them. Because it actually takes a great deal of courage to feel entitled to that. I think growing up in alcoholism does not necessarily encourage, you know, the family members don't necessarily get a lot of encouragement to like live your own life and figure out what you want to be. At least I didn't. There was a lot of attention focused on the alcoholics and what their needs were. And so that's, I guess, the biggest thing that's changed for me is feeling like I can make those decisions, that I can actively make those decisions. I made a lot of decisions passively, and I made a lot of decisions like in reaction to things that other people did, sort of like picking from the leftovers of things, you know? And I think I've gotten the confidence in Al-Anon, like I've done the work to get to know myself and what's important to me and maybe what I'm good at and maybe what I'm not good at. And that's helped me to make some decisions and also to have some aspirations. So I think that's the biggest difference. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So I have a question for Bev. How do you handle criticism and not take it personally?
Oh, that's been a long process. where do I even start with that? You know, I also have learned in Al-Anon to presume goodwill. You know, that's been really, really important, and that sometimes my perception of what they're saying is criticism, but it may not be criticism. It's really just sometimes how people talk, you know, how people present themselves, that maybe they are abrasive or maybe their tone. And so, you know, I've learned to say things like, well, tell me more. And, you know, sometimes it means like, if they just say, well, I really didn't like how you gave your report. Well, thanks for sharing. But sometimes it might be that I need to ask more specifics. Like, what about my report did you not like? Well, you didn't give the treasurer's report or something. And I said, would you like the treasurer's report? I have it with me. You know, just for me to take the personal out. And that's been a lot of prayer and meditation. I've also learned in Al-Anon to pause before I speak. that has been a huge gift from my higher power. Because, you know, when I can pause just a second or two before I say something, when I'm feeling that anger or confrontation, I really believe my higher power has an opportunity to step in there, and he softens my body language. My tone of voice is going to be different. And also, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business. I may not be able to resolve something. And also, you know, man, learning about the traditions and concepts, you know, going to meetings that actively discuss them, studying them, like Carrie was talking about, you know, like with someone you sponsor, or I could ask my sponsor to do that. That's really been helpful to learn how to apply, you know, conflict resolution, and also just, you know, becoming more comfortable with myself, becoming more, well, just confident with myself has certainly helped me to deal with that criticism. I heard one time somebody say, you know, when somebody throws criticism at you, just feel like there's like a glass wall and it just bounces right off, you know, that it doesn't penetrate. So that's another helpful tool that's helped me. I hope I helped you. Whoever asked the question, I hope that gave you some stuff.
Thank you, Bev. So just a reminder, now that I've got my audio back, if I've received a question from you in the chat, I'm asking that question for you to the speakers. And if you still have a question, you can send that to me in the chat. And if you're on the phone and have a question, you can hit *9 to raise your hand. Okay, so my next question is for Carrie. How has the program helped with discernment? In other words, what hopes and dreams to let go of and which ones to keep?
You know, I think probably what helps the most with that is prayer, because I default to trying to think my way out of problems. I don't want to feel any feelings, and I certainly don't want to surrender anything. I'm just going to think my way out of everything and do it all on my own. Like, that's my default, right? And if I'm not investing enough time in prayer and meditation, then I'm going to use that approach for whatever decisions I have to make. And it becomes very cumbersome because, oh, well, then if I'm trying to figure out what to keep and what to let go of, well, now I have to anticipate all possible outcomes. So that's a lot of thinking work. How many variables are there? A lot. So I get bogged down, right, with trying to find the right answer, because so much thinking that has to be done, and it becomes obsessive. And when that happens, of course, I'm not actually making any progress toward a decision. It's just a lot of busy work. And so prayer is really the answer. Like, stop trying to solve the problem yourself and ask for whatever, ask for more information if I don't have enough information, ask for willingness to wait for a clear answer, just turn it over and let it go. There are lots of different ways that I can ask for the help that I need, depending on what the situation is. But like, discernment just isn't a natural gift that I have. Because that's my method, right? Is anticipate all possible outcomes, extrapolate everything into every infinite universe, and then try to pick one. It's a disaster. So that's an area where I realize, you know, my power is limited, and I need to join forces with something that has more power. And so this is the opportunity for surrender. To give that problem to God and to ask for what I need to be able to make a decision. And then probably throw in a prayer for patience, because he doesn't always work on my timeline. So that's what I have.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. So my next question is for Cherie. Did anyone, friend or family, resent the time you spent in Al-Anon in service? And how have you handled that?
Oh, that's a great question. So my husband, who's right here, can actually share a story about that, about resenting my time in service. That year that I was that district rep and that convention chair, it took up a lot of my time. And just doing all the other stuff, the Day and Al-Anon workshops and all the fun stuff. And I was going to, you know, multiple meetings and getting to know the groups and all of that. And he just shares this in his story where he called his sponsor because, you know, we hit a wall where it's like, I'm busy, I'm going, I'm loving life. And he thinks I should be home doing more things that, you know, the wifely duties. And so he has an opinion about it. And him and I had been butting heads for a while. And so he goes to a sponsor and he complains to his sponsor. And I've always loved my husband's sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he complains and his sponsor basically shoots him down and says, do you know how many men in AA call me because their wives are too busy in recovery? Like none. And you're calling because your wife is in recovery and active. And so, you know, he shared that story for me and I fell in love with his sponsor all over again. I will say this, that I can go overboard. I am an overachiever and over responsible and I can go over. And so it's really important that tradition one is super important, that what I'm doing can affect the group welfare and I need to be conscious of the group welfare. And so, so that balance is never achieved in my life. And I have to do what's good. So him and I talk about things all the time. Before I step into the next service position, I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? And this is what I think it entails, but it might change, right? I always give myself an out. I will also share that I used to have a really super close relationship with my youngest brother and his wife. And again, being over responsible and the people pleaser and the caretaker, I did a lot with that family. And the more I got involved in Al-Anon, the less available I became to do that caretaking with their children. And I had to start using that no word and I got some pushback. And at one point it literally was, they were very unhappy with me because of the changes, because of those boundaries, because I wasn't available 24/7 to them. And the dynamics in that relationship changed and it was really painful and it was sad, but I also look back at it going, I wouldn't change anything about who I am in Al-Anon today. I look at that relationship and recognize it was unhealthy. There wasn't a healthy relationship. So I didn't see it in the moment, but I can see it today. I hope that answered that question. Thanks.
All right, thank you. I think we're doing good. We've got two questions and two people to answer them, I think. This question is for Bev. How do you deal with dominance?
One of the things that I learned to deal with it is if people are, you know, pushing and asking me to do something, I can say, let me think about it. And I'll call you on Sunday evening, you know, to kind of set a time frame or whatever, you know, whatever time frame I think, because that gives me time to think about, do I want to do this, what they're asking? Do I partly want to do it? Do I not want to do it at all? And then give me time to talk to a sponsor, another Al-Anon friend, and just kind of like feel this out. Am I not wanting to do it because I didn't like their approach? You know, that might, you know, be it. Maybe it is something I would like to do. I don't want to be doing it because they're being pushy and bully and a dominant. You know, I want to be able to respond appropriately. And so just that time gives me an opportunity to kind of decide what it is I want and maybe set some boundaries or say, you know, I can do this from 2 to 4, but I can't be there all day, you know, whatever it might be. And then I need to call them at the time that I told them I was going to call them. I need to be responsible. And pulling back from that dominance and letting me have, I guess, some own my own control, my own decision, has really been a good way for me to learn to deal with that. That's it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So our last question is anybody, you discuss amongst yourselves maybe, or if you have a burning desire to answer it. The question is, as a GR, how do you handle when a newer member of the group wants to insist on a right or wrong way to work the steps? based on information from outside of Al-Anon.
Can you repeat the question?
Yes. As a GR, how do you handle when a newer member of the group wants to insist on a right or wrong way to work the steps based on information from outside of Al-Anon? Okay. So the question was actually for one of our three speakers. So I'm sorry that I was not clear about that. One of the three of you gets to.
You know, I mean, that's kind of a hard question to ask because I don't know, like, is this person asking it like during the meeting? Are they pushing it during a, you know, a business meeting? And sometimes, you know, you don't have to respond. You know, if it's her turn to share or his turn to share and they're just talking about how they think the steps need to be worked, and well, then let them, I mean, they share. And then when they're done, the next person gets to talk. You know, you also sometimes have to be the just brave and just, you know, go up to them afterwards and say, I'd like to hear more about that. Let's go to coffee, you know, and just take an opportunity to visit with that person one-on-one. I don't have to react. And what do they say? I don't have to go to every fight I'm invited to or whatever, you know, I can just try and deal with it in the most loving way that I can. Cherie?
I think you handled it. That's a really tough question. And I think a couple of things come to mind. You know, when folks are new, and for those of us who've had those newcomers, we smile and we nod and we say, keep coming back. There's so much grace and compassion that we give the newcomer, and rightly so. The other thing that I think of too is that as members continue to keep coming back, I think they'll learn, and all I can do is just speak for myself. This is how my sponsor helped me. And this is how I work this step. And I can only speak for my own experience, strength, and hope. I appreciate when other members do that. We don't get into teaching modes. And I also do agree. It does take some courage sometimes for us that know better. I was taught by the longtime members that for those of us who know better, we do better. And sometimes I have to speak out, and I've had to do this. I'm sure you guys have had to at times where somebody decides to read a pamphlet from an outside program. And that has happened often. And I just would have to, you know, just unfortunately interrupt and say, you know, we only read Al-Anon literature here, conference approved literature. But thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure it was helpful to you. And I try to be as polite as possible, even though it's a sort of a line that we have that, you know, we only read our literature so that we all can be on the same page together. So that's a tough question, but you know, what I learned from my long-term members is that the next week we'll have a topic on dominance, or the next week we'll talk about a tradition that specifically addresses that situation, or that, I don't want to say a conflict, but an opportunity to learn more. So that's it. Thanks.
Okay. And I will just to do my part. I just want to add, the longer I've been around, the easier it's become for me to address people directly about those kinds of issues rather than talking around people and issues like what I did before. I've had to take that responsibility. But what I know is I can't do it when I'm angry, or when, like, a lot of time I can't do it right after it just happened. So sometimes that means I have to wait, you know, I have to practice tolerance and patience until I'm ready to have that conversation. Otherwise it's going to go badly, and it's going to be because I forced it.
Okay, thank you all. Let's thank them again. And I'm going to just turn it back over to Maureen since we're right at our time limit. Thank you so much, all of you. This is
awesome. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, we've had a few challenges today, but you know, that happens from time to time. You know, you never know what your higher power is going to bring on to you to help you work the program and get through the day. So anyway, yes, thank you everybody for participating today, for the great questions, and for our awesome speakers. One more time, All right. I'd like to also invite you to our next workshop, which will be on Thursday, August 5th at 7 p.m. Phoenix, Arizona time. We do not go on daylight savings time, as you are aware. And the topic will be rewards in all aspects of our life, a lesson in acceptance. And again, that'll be from When I Got Busy, I Got Better. And our speakers that week will be Pam C. K. from Arizona, Margaret R. from Nebraska, and Flo Ann from Arizona. So we hope to see you guys there. And if you guys would please help me, if you want to unmute, that'd be great. If not, that's fine too. Close the meeting with the declaration.